Hey everyone, it's been said that every quilt tells a story, and it's so true. But I also believe every quilter has a story to tell. I wanted to hear about the people behind these wonderful quilts and thought you'd enjoy hearing about their lives also. Welcome to A Quilter's Life. Guthrie and I had the opportunity to attend Thelma Oliver's 90th birthday party this past spring. She is still very involved with the church we attend. What a blessing to spend time with her and enjoy some stories from her life. Welcome to A Quilter's Life, Thelma.
Hello. Do I know you?
Oh, for a few years, I think.
Okay.
Oh. Where were you born?
Out on Route 26, out at Dart. And we lived out there in different places until I got in the eighth grade. Then we moved. And while I was out there, I went to Little Miss Kingdom Grade School, Bloomfield School, Little Miss Kingdom, and Lawrence. And then we moved out on the farm, out at Pleasant Hill. And then we went to school at Lower Salem.
Okay.
Graduated from there. And we lived on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
And Dad worked in the oil field, away from home most of the time. And every morning we'd get up, Mom would fix breakfast, and Dale and Mother would go to the barn to milk, and I got the dishes done and lunches packed before the school bus came.
Wow. Did you raise crops?
Yes. And Dale and I did them with the horses.
Wow.
Until we left home, then Dad and Haroldine was doing it, so they had a tractor.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. But, no, well, we had wheat and hay, corn in our garden.
Mm-hmm.
And all of our fruit from in middle of June. Strawberries on through till mm-hmm. fall. We had fruit of some kind.
Wow.
That was the hardest of leaving on the farm.
Oh. How about you did a lot of canning of that?
Oh, yeah. That's the only thing. We didn't have freezers.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have all the things they have today to work with. So you got out and you did it. Because if you're going to eat in the winter, you put it away in the summer, just yeah. like the squirrels do with the nuts.
Right.
But, no. Then I graduated, and then I didn't go on to school for 2 years.
Okay.
I worked as a nursing assistant at Memorial for a year. And the other year, my first year, I got all the chores done before Dale got home. Then he played basketball, so we could go to all the ball games.
Oh, wow.
But no. But then I went to, decided I wanted to stay in the medical field.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't want to stay as a nursing assistant.
Right.
So I got the streetcar here in Marietta.
Mm-hmm.
Went to Parkersburg, took the test, and had I not passed it, no one would have ever known I was there.
Oh.
Then in the August of 49, started nurses training, graduated from St. Joseph.
How many years were you in training then?
3 years.
Okay.
And that is full 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
You worked every season. You didn't have yeah. your summers off.
No.
You didn't have all your holidays, all your vacations like they have these days.
And you didn't go home at night. You stayed.
We had to stay in the nurse's home there, and we had restrictions. We had to be in at 8 o'clock during the week. Study hour was from 9 to 10, and lights was out at 10:30.
Wow.
You even got put on campus part of the time, and you couldn't leave the nursing home only to walk to the hospital, which we were down on Market Street, almost to 13th Street. And that's 19th Street.
Wow.
We walked that. And you couldn't get phone calls. Nothing. Fortunately, I never got that. But half of my class did. Because when we first started, we got every other weekend off.
Okay.
And our one teacher, she decided she's going to keep track, you know, what's the difference between staying there on the weekend and going home. She gave us a test on Monday.
Okay.
And those that failed the test that one Monday, they were all campused. And that was just, we'd been in there a little over 5 months, because at 6 months you got your cap and the bib to wear a uniform and everything. And all some of those girls wanted to get new shoes and all this stuff before, and they weren't allowed to go out to get nothing.
Oh.
But I wouldn't trade it for any of the training today, because we did hands-on. Today it's book work. And they don't touch a patient. I'm sorry to say.
Maybe some patients are happy about that.
Well, it always aggravates me, because when we did a patient, we did the complete thing. We cleaned the room. And so flowers need water, we put new water on and dusted everything down. And they don't even get baths today.
No, that's somebody else's job, isn't it?
They don't even get them when they're in the hospital.
Yeah, that's true.
So, no, nursing has come a long ways.
Yeah.
When we were in training, we had our class time, but we worked 8 hours, 6 days a week. Besides that,
okay, wow.
If you had class from 9 to 2 or something like that, you went on duty and worked from 7 to 9. Then you'd either go to work at 3, work 3 to 7, or go to at 7 to 11. So
long days.
It was long days, but we learned by doing. And there wasn't hardly any RNs. It was all students, except on the day shift. The RNs got to work days. And we worked through 11, 11, 7. But today they don't know anything about any of that.
Yeah. So how long were you a nurse?
I retired in 88. Went training in 49. Worked as a nursing assistant a year prior to that. When I first got out, I worked on maternity. And worked labor room to start with. Some of those patients, back then, they didn't have all these classes for maternity patients. Nothing. And especially if they're coming in for their first child, they were scared to death.
Yeah.
Because grandma told them how terrible it was. And regardless what you would tell them, they were still scared to death. I can understand why.
Right.
If I was having a baby, I'd been to, when I come in the front door, I'd ask for something for pain. But no, and I used to tell them that I had six kids, especially the ones, you know, oh, you've never had anything like this. And, oh, you don't know what we're going through. And I tell them I had six kids. And then they'd go out on the floor and talk to the nursing assistants about it. Well, they didn't know anyone back there. But they never told the patients.
Oh, they didn't. Well, I don't think we, I know, but I don't think people listening know that you don't have any children.
No. I have no children. Wouldn't know what to do with them.
But you had those patients believing you had six.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I'd gone through that. And I was here working, taking care of you.
And it calmed them down.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So funny.
Because if I could do it and be there and taking care of six kids at home, well. And then I got to be the head nurse on maternity.
Oh, wow.
And I was that for about 5 years. Then I went into night house supervision.
Huh.
And we didn't have any doctors in the emergency room or anything like they have now.
Okay.
And I had a nursing assistant in the emergency room. And when a car pulled up, she'd call me and I'd get out and take care of them. And we pretty much did. If it was something that needed a surgeon or it was a heart or something, that maybe we could get a doctor to come in. One time I sent a patient to Morgantown. It was a wreck and he wasn't responding. And I couldn't get anyone to come in. So I just said, he was talking time and got to Morgan House and they sent him back to us. But, you know, a lot of times when I call a doctor, there was a doctor on call for medicine and for surgery and everything. If I couldn't get the response I wanted, I'd hang up and call another. Example, I remember this 16-year-old boy from out of Pennsboro come in with terrible pain. And, you know, a country boy 16 isn't going to be bent over with pain unless there's something wrong. I called the surgeon for, I was pretty sure it was appendix. And he wouldn't come in. So I just called another one until I got someone to come in. They took the boy to surgery. And,
but yeah, that's what it was, right?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't see a boy that in pain like he was and putting it on.
Yeah.
But you know, you just did what you had to do.
So you had a lot of responsibility in your job.
Yeah, because if they needed medicines not at night, you was the pharmacist. Or they needed IV started, they couldn't get it done. You was there to help that. Then I saw all these departments added because we didn't have a recovery room. We didn't have ICU. We didn't have coronary care and all these things.
Yeah.
You just took care of them on the units.
Wow.
But then I graduated, I got an LPN in the emergency room. And I have to tell you about one of his patients. Had this patient just carry it on. Chester calls me and he says, Velma, this lady down here, she acts like she's going to die. So by the time I got down there, he was Catholic, so he did last rites. And she jumped out of there and went home. He said, guess she wasn't so sick after all. But, you know, there's all these things that keep coming back to mind. Hey, we got a real bad burn from St. Mary's jail. He'd set himself on fire in there. And the only thing that really wasn't burnt was his feet, because he had on heavy shoes. Mm-hmm. And we had to start an IV, and we had to, that was the only place. And we shipped him on to Pennsylvania, but And we didn't have respiratory therapy. If anyone needed an x-ray, you called them out from home for lab work or anything. Mm-hmm. We were just bare bones.
Yeah.
A building to people in it to start with.
Yeah. You saw a lot of changes over the years.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like coronary care, all this stuff. When we had cardiology and training, the doctor says, oh, you don't need to read EKGs. You'll never be reading them. But with coronary care, we was reading them and telling them what was showing. Mm-hmm. But you had to take all the classes with everything as they went along. I was on night supervision from 62 until 73, I think it was. Then I went off on day shift duty and did spatial projects. Then we had these patients in the area on dialysis. They had to go to Columbus or Charleston or Pittsburgh. So they decided they needed dialysis in the area. It was offered to Camden Clark. It was offered at Marietta Memorial. And neither one of them wanted it because it was an expense. It wasn't a money-making thing at that time.
Okay.
So we took it on. And I was in on the ground floor of that.
Wow.
Had to go to Charleston, learn how to do dialysis. And our doctor, she came every month to check the patients. She came in from Charleston. But the patients we did were patients that could have been done at home had they had a helper, because they did a lot of home dialysis at that time. The hemo. Now they do the CAPD, the peritoneal dialysis, but there's very little home hemo anymore, because it's dangerous to start with.
Yeah.
And you're restricted, so any patient that's on dialysis, except the peritoneal, you can have all the fluids you want, your diet, because you're being dialyzed 24/7.
Wow.
Where with the other, it's 3 days a week, and everything you put in your system stays there till we wash it out. Like your potassium is probably the worst thing, because it builds up and does your heart in.
Oh my.
This lady that she died during the night one night, and her daughter was blaming herself because they aren't allowed tomatoes. Or potatoes have to be soaked 24 hours, you know, and diced. So there's all that stuff soaked out of them. And her mother wanted lasagna. So when I told her, I said, you know, fix her a little bit before she comes in, and we'll clean it out of her system. Well, she fixed her a little bit, and there was some left over. And she put it in the refrigerator, and the next morning it wasn't there. And her mother was dead.
Wow.
But there was a time you can cheat on most all diets, won't you?
Yeah.
Because if they did it just before they come in, well, we could get it out.
Yeah.
But no.
Now, during that time, weren't you taking care of your own mother?
Yes. She had Parkinson's, and she was bedfast for 2.5 years.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I had 2 people living in from Sunday evening to Friday evening.
Okay.
Or I couldn't have worked.
Yeah.
And I took care of her from the time I got home till I left the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then my brothers came down. There was one of them here every weekend with me. They never left me
mm-hmm.
by myself.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Not everyone has that privilege.
No.
Mm-hmm. But they take care of her the same as I did.
Mm-hmm.
They'd go in, they'd change her. She had a feeding tube in. They would mm-hmm. feed her. Just anything I could do, they did.
Hmm.
But, no, we managed, and none of us regret it to this day.
Yeah, yeah.
But, and then I had 2 aunts and a friend of Mom's. They were in their 80s, and Ada was about 90 at that time. They all needed help.
Mm-hmm.
So we took that project on.
Your brothers helped with them also?
No.
Oh, okay.
Mm-mm. Well, other than Aunt Lila, they had children.
Yeah.
Their children, well, the one lady, the friend of Mom's, she had 2 sons, one in Zanesville and one in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
So they couldn't be here. It's working.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're both teachers.
Yeah. Life gets so busy, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. And then Bessie McMahon died before Aunt Lila was blind. Well, she's totally blind for 8 years.
Wow.
And she really couldn't see that much mm-hmm. prior to. But after she got totally blind, then had someone live in with her.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there every other weekend and all holidays and in between.
Yeah.
Because you got to play. Aunt Lila couldn't see me, but Bonnie could see when I go by in the car.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go this way because they lived down near the corner. Because sometimes you have to have a little life of your own.
Yeah, yeah. So
mm-hmm.
headed out the street the opposite way.
Yeah. So like Bonnie wouldn't see me. But, no. Then after Aunt Lila, there was Harriet Ron, I think, was the next one. She was catty corner.
Okay.
She was a nurse. She was a director of nurses down at Marion Memorial.
Okay.
And when she'd get sick, she never went to Memorial, the hospital. She'd come down to St. Joe. So no one that worked under would be taking care of her. And the first time she came in, I was on night supervision, and that name, I said, well, I know her. So the next morning I stopped by to see her. Well, how did you know I was here?
These small towns, you can't escape.
No. And then Ray Partlow was the next.
Yeah.
Then Leora Griffin.
Okay.
But Aunt Lila died in 2001, and mm-hmm. so, and then Bernice.
Yeah.
But it's been, and others, I, you know, took appointments and one thing and another, but it kept me busy.
You've been a good friend.
that's pretty much. Well, I moved here in 84.
Okay.
I'd lived in Parkersburg prior to that. And mother had to have someone with her, so then I moved, come up here and at this place then.
Yeah.
And she lived back of Heartland there in a little house. Well, she didn't think we needed this house. And, you know, I knew she was going to need a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. Need a place where it was wheelchair accessible, mm-hmm. like in the bathrooms and everywhere. But, no, she didn't need it.
No.
But she didn't know what the future was going to be either. But, no, and I started going up to Putman probably in 82 or something like that.
I know you do a lot of crafts. What are some of the crafts that you do?
Well, right now I'm embroidering quilt tops. But then at one time I made 19 embroidered quilt tops, quilted 4 of them. And then I got tennis elbow. And when I put my arm on the frame, that sucker hurt. So then I had to have, and they were for my great nieces and nephews. I gave them all quilt 1 year for Christmas.
Yeah.
But I do jigsaw puzzles. I do adult coloring books.
Yeah.
And just whatever turns you on at a given time. That's what you do.
Yeah. Who introduced you? When did you start learning about quilting?
Oh, my mother. Oh, my first quilt with her scraps. And it was this little windmill quilt. And none of my corners come to the center, nothing. Some of the blocks are bigger than others.
Yeah.
She put together, though. God bless her. I don't know how she did it. And then my aunt quilted it for me. Oh. I was probably 10 or something like
that. Uh-huh.
But, and mother at the Lord's Baptist, the ladies, they met once a month and they always quilted. You know, we were always around when it was all quilting and it was just something you did.
Yeah.
I even took a week's vacation from work to quilt a quilt. I embroidered and I was ready to, like in February. And all the girls, why in the world would you do that? I said, at least I'll come back relaxed. You come back from vacation from all these trips and you're tired or you were when you got. But I took a week's vacation.
And got it done.
Yes. And then mother was quilting all the time. And then my niece graduated from college. And she'd been down in Kentucky for 3 months. And she picked up this old quilt. It was partly pieced, partly one. So she went ahead and she pieced it. So she came down for mom to show her how to quilt. And dad used to say she spent more time under the quilt looking at her stitches. And she did quilt. Oh, and they were such little tight things. The mother kept telling her, says, you'll never get a quilt done if you quilt like that. She says, and when you quilt that tight, it puckers.
Oh, really?
But no, she'd take a few stitches and she could under the quilt to see what it looked like. And dad, you know, mom had her thing. She quilted and sewed and what have you. But we didn't have anything for him to do. So I started him off on those wire hangers and putting yarn.
Okay.
Put two of them together and do them with yarn. We did that for a long time. Then one of the supervisors was from New York, and she's over there visiting. And they had this board with nails on it that they were making afghans and things on. So her husband made me one for Dad. And he made afghans for everybody.
Oh, neat.
And he even made, original boards like this. But he made one that was, and you know why he did that? Because this fella wanted one of them made to be cover him in his casket.
Yeah. Oh.
So Dad made, Ed brought his yarn.
Yeah.
He wanted it made white yarn. So I had to go to that funeral to see whether he had it on. And he did. In fact, before I retired, I got all this yarn because I was going to do that.
Yeah.
I finally gave the yarn away.
It wasn't your thing.
No.
What were your favorite tools in making your quilts?
My favorite tools for making my quilts?
Yeah.
Was just my old friend. Needle
and thread.
And bordering. But because I haven't pieced any quilts. Well, the fact, the one I got on my one bed back there is the last one I pieced. It was just a yellow and white square, little square job.
Yeah.
Easy. But I did get the corners pretty good. But no.
You got better over the years, huh?
Yeah. If I wouldn't, if she probably wouldn't let me use the sewing machine.
Do you have a favorite part of the quilting process? Some people like one part and some people like it all.
Well, right now I've got an embroidery quilt. It's in two pieces. Well, I got the first half done. I was hurrying to getting that done. Now I know what it looks like. And I don't know whether I'll ever finish it. I got the other half done. But, you know, there's no hurry now. I see what it's going to look like. But I used to do that with all my embroidery. I'd embroider one pillowcase or one end of a scarf. And finally, Mother would finish them up. She says, they're mine. I finished them. She knew I never would have. But, no. Well, you know, when I was embroidering all those quilts for the kids, I had a goal.
Yeah.
They were going to somebody. And this was not anyone.
Yeah.
So there's no hurry.
No hurry. Just when you feel like it.
Yeah. And my niece keeps saying, well, Zelma, I told you I'd quilt that quilt for you. Well, I told her a while back, I said, you know, you may have to finish embroidering it for you. But, no. Those things just don't have the push in my mind as what they used to.
Yeah. Over the years, do you have a worst quilting experience?
Not really. Except when I was quilting and my elbow started hurting.
Yeah.
But otherwise, they've all turned out okay. Yeah. I don't have any. Well, I've got that one in there left. That's all I have left. They're all given away.
All given away.
In fact, my first one, just this summer, it left here.
The one you made when you were 10.
Yeah, my youngest niece, I said, would you want this? I said, you probably won't want to put it out on the bed. She says, sure, I want it. So she took it.
Yeah, I'm sure it's special to her.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you make quilts?
What do we make? Well, we made them to start with to keep warm.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, it was just to give away as gifts.
Okay. And you mainly made them for family.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Well, one I made. I gave to church to raffle.
Uh-huh.
But otherwise, all in family. And a couple of them I appliqued. But
that's a special talent.
It's a talent that's tedious.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But I did that after I retired.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Take a little more time with it.
Yeah.
Is there a tip that you would give to someone?
It's something I think everyone should learn to do because it's relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
Or it is if you enjoy it. It could be a challenge.
Yeah.
But to me, it was relaxing. And back when, you know, we made all of our clothes. We had all the scraps.
Yeah.
And it was a way of using them up.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have them anymore.
No.
Well, now, I used to rip up polyester all the time, slacks, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Albertus made baby quilts.
Yeah.
For us to give away.
Mm-hmm.
But people wouldn't do that today.
No. Thank you so much for letting me interview you today.
You're quite welcome.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of A Quilter's Life. You can find more stories on aquilterslife.com or subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts so each episode will be downloaded automatically. Thanks for listening.